Gavrilek, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews in it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Post-grand final edition leading into the trade period. And we're joined today by the man who's written more copy than any man in Australia over the past week, John Ralph. John, thanks for joining us, mate, in your busy schedule.
All about quantity over quality, Macca, but we'll get it right one day.
Fantastic. Mate, it was an extraordinary grand final, swings and roundabouts all the way through. What was the absolute highlight for you, do you think?
Well, I think that's one of the great discussions out of it, Macca. I think it was a great grand final. I know people will say, well, was it good? Was it great? You know, when one team scores 100 points to seven in the last, 45 minutes. But, you know, as a journo and as you are as well, you're looking for incidents. So you're looking for momentum swings. You're looking for tribunal incidents. You're looking for, you know, all of the things that make you just gasp on the couch or, you know, back when we used to go to live football. And I think it had that. I think it had, you know, that brilliant first quarter with Melbourne and it had Cozzy Pickett and his frenetic pressure. And then it had the way that the Western Bulldogs came back. It had that extraordinary second quarter with, you know, both Bontempelli and Treloar firing. And then we know so much about the third quarter. I watched a bit of the last quarter last night, a total blur, you know, given that, you know, we were both writing copy, but, you know, it just almost seems so immaterial to the result. But I thought, Macca, okay, how does it stand up with last year where, you know, Geelong 21 points up, you know, a massive contest early on with Dangerfield injured and Vlosten injured and then Gary Ablett, you know, only moments later dislocating his shoulder and then, you know, Dusty finding a way to come back. Was it a better grand final than 2020?
I don't think it was. I think, it's hard. It's a really difficult one. If you chop the first half up, I reckon it was. And you tend to find in grand finals that sometimes when the game is gone, my son had a great line, Ralphie, and I didn't even think about this. He said, that's the closest 74-point game I've ever seen. And he was probably right in a lot of ways, wasn't he? In the sense that all of a sudden there was just massive sweep from Melbourne in the last quarter. Do you rate this grand final better than last year's grand final?
Well, I'm a Tiger fan, so it's pretty hard, isn't it? Yeah, and I think that's the thing that we've been so lucky with in the last 20 years. Like, we had a lot of one-sided grand finals for a long time there through the late 90s and early 2000s. But we have had great grand finals. Absolutely. We've had 2018. Yeah, we've had 2016, which the Dogs, you know, won in the end, but only ripped apart.
That's a lot closer game, isn't it? When you look at it, that's a lot closer game than you think. And you look at even Hawthorne and Fremantle, some games sometimes, that Hawthorne-Fremantle grand final end up being not a huge margin. So we've been blessed, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. I'll give you my five highlights, Macca.
Yeah, go for them.
So the James Harms kick, you know, these, well, just in any order, and they're a bit obscure. Yep. I could say that, you know, Christian Petrarca was great and the centre square stuff was great, but these are my left of centre highlights. So the James Harms kick to Bailey Fritsch. You know, even Simon Goodwin last night on the couch talked about that dump kick from the stoppage. And yet this one was just laces out. Yeah, you know, we all know the prelude to it now where Viney comes through the contest, Bailey Smith fumbles. And instead of blasting it to the top of the pack or dumping it or kicking an up and under ball, laces out on the angle meant that only one player could mark it, and that was Fritsch with Easton Wood trailing in behind. And that was the start of the rot. The selflessness of Gawn, you know, again, he talks RSN today about it wasn't the fact that he wasn't getting the hit outs. It was the fact that the Western Bulldogs were sometimes sharking them. And so even just that game sense from him to go that, okay, we know our midfield's dominant. Jackson's going to be a bit more unpredictable. You know, he probably only gets half of the hit outs, but we're going to go better with him. I just thought the foresight and the game sense for Gawn to be able to do that was just remarkable. The clean pickup from Petrarca, you know, so where that ball is booted in long from Ben Brown, who I thought was just magnificent, by the way. And it's almost that suction cup, you know, the ball bounces out of a pack. He just grabs it so clean. He's got Dunkley behind him. Cozzy Pickett puts the shepherd on goal again, you know, that they're almost close to busting it open. I thought May dominating Aaron Norton despite his torn hamstring was one of the great feats. Now, he was shaky early, Stephen May.
He was.
But he just found a way not only to totally shut his opponent out, which was all he needed to do, but with some key intercepts in that third quarter. And just the other one, which again, you know, if the Bulldogs win, we are talking for the ages about Bontempelli and Treloar's second terms. You know, both of them, you know, have plenty of possession. I think both kicked three in the end. And Treloar's couple of snaps at the fall of the ball. You know, Bontempelli just finding a way. I mean, those two players, I mean, they could scarcely have done more. And yet we're still thinking about, geez, those 5 minutes in which Bontempelli was off the ground, where Melbourne kicked the three goals, three of their first seven in that third term, and the game slips away with Bontempelli sitting on the bench.
Yeah, they're great points, aren't they? And isn't it great to see Adam Treloar play well in another grand final? He did say leading into it that he was going to throw everything. He was never going to have any what-if moments from that from this particular year, given what happened in 2018, which I don't remember a lot of that game. Ralphie, you might have to fill me in at some other stage. But that was fantastic, wasn't it? The one that stood out to me, maybe because I spoke to him during the week and had a chat to Bailey Fritch, you know, this kid from Cold Street. I'm sick, Ralphie, of we all talk up the great private school kids and this is the best way to come through the system. This is a kid who left school at 16, Ralphie, was told by the Eastern Rangers he was too small, just a really good kick for goal, said that he made his debut with Coldstream Seniors when he was 16, kicked four goals from the pocket, next to a family member. And he said, this is going to be my thing for the next 15 years. There's 250 people here. Well, mate, he did it again with 61,000 on the weekend. And tell me another instance. It's quite bizarre. You go back, not many guys kick six in grand finals. You've got to go all the way back to Darren Jarman, who incidentally probably should have won the medal in that 1997 year if you go back.
That was an extraordinary performance.
He would have won it. Yeah, he shouldn't have won it.
He shouldn't have won it. In retrospect, when we see how hard it is now to turn a grand final, you know, Andrew McLeod, no one disputes, you know, two amazing Norm Smith medals. But, I mean, it'd be fascinating to go back and watch that game and go, well, you know, the bloke that turns it in the blink of an eye with six goals in a grand final and he doesn't even get the Norm Smith.
No, and I think there's a few voting. Back then, Ralphie, if you remember rightly, that the AFL used to request the voting to be in by 15-minute mark of the last quarter, which you think back now and you think, how was that ever allowed to happen? And that was the case. We know that with Nathan Buckley in the 2002 grand final. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Petrarca shouldn't have won. Honestly, he was winks in the sense that he was so far ahead of everyone else. And I'm not saying that, but I love the fact that all the other, you know, the voting panelists actually all come up with Fritch as the second. Geez, it would have been one of the great grand finals to be a Norm Smith judge in. You know that I stress about these things, Ralphie. Who was your one vote? Who would your one vote have gone to?
Look, it was interesting that Max Gorn said today that he thought Angus Brayshaw played the best game he's ever seen from him. I still thought that Clayton Oliver was just massive in that second term. You know, he kicks the ceiling goal in that third term, rather. I think six score assists, nine possessions. You know, he was Robin to Petrarca's Batman. Yeah, yeah, you could have slotted in Bontempelli. You could have slotted in any number of players. But for me, I thought it was a pretty clear 3-2-1. But as you say, I mean, you're trying to find a reason to say that that Fritch should have won the Norm Smith medal. And yet in your heart of hearts, you know, with all the beautiful goals that he kicked, you know, Petrarca there with that beautiful goal across 50 himself that set the tone early, you know, and then with that dribbling goal, which is one of the great grand final goals, you know, he had a touch in every instrumental moment, every big moment in that game. Maybe in hindsight, 10 years down the track, they'll say, how did Fritch not get it? But I think he was the true Norm Smith medalist.
No doubt. There's no question at all. It's one of the great grand final individual performances. You put it up there. Dusty's had a few of them. Was he as dominant? You know, maybe, I don't know. It was very much a Dusty performance. You look at some of the other Norm Smith medals. Just on Melbourne, this is a very young side, Ralphie. I think they averaged 24. They got so many. I think they had 7 or 8, 21 and unders. I think it might have been 8, actually. Is there a dynasty here, or do we get a little bit too carried away sometimes with trying to throw up a dynasty for a young side? There was a team called Collingwood, I think, in 2010, which was one of the youngest teams of all time. They made the grand final the next year and then sort of semi-fell away a bit after that. Can they have a dynasty, this Melbourne team?
Well, Collingwood self-destructed, didn't they? You know, some of their own cultural issues and some of it just by, you know, a great team the following year, you know, ripped one away from them. You know, when you think that, you know, Collingwood didn't win a second one, it's pretty close to Essendon up there, you know, in 2000 with not, you know, winning a second premiership in what was a 4 or 5 year period. I look at Cozzy Pickett and I think, you know, he can be the best small forward in the competition in 2 years. He probably was for the first 8 weeks this year. I look at Luke Jackson and I say he might not be the best, you know, old-fashioned ruckman, but I look at him as the next Nick Nat. you know, Nick Knapp probably leaps a little bit higher, but those cat-like reflexes that allow him to get to the fall of the ball, you know, to rove forward of the contest and handball the ball to Clayton Oliver for that defining goal, you know, I just think he can be anything. Now, I looked at Jake Bowie and I thought he's a nice little rookie player that's come in and filled a role. He's a pick 21. You know, so many of these guys there, Harrison Petty, who's, you know, he's the same, you know, mid-30s pick. You know, Sparrow, I think, has got massive improvement left in him. Spargo's going to be that will-o'-the-wisp guy who can kick 40 goals. They're the reasons why I think they can win multiple flags, not just because, you know, yeah, they dominated and won by 70-odd points. Yeah, I think if they only won one, they'd have left one and maybe two on the table. Why is it, Macca? Is it that the list builds are so much better now that, you know, you don't just go and get a 30-year-old player, you win a flag, and then you fall off the perch? Because we've seen Brisbane, Geelong, Richmond, all win three premierships, Hawthorn, of course, four themselves, three or more premierships in the span of 20 years. Why is it for you?
I don't know whether it is that, you know, that it's a really difficult question because you think about it, it was so hard to win back-to-back premierships. Like, that was the hardest thing, win back-to-back. Like, we saw Hawthorn in that sustained period, which was exceptional through the 80s as well. Is it that these teams have just been able to build that list in a great way? I think Melbourne, the way they were actually, we used to bag Melbourne, Ralphie, quite a few years ago for the way they stuffed up their early selections. They don't stuff things up anymore. They've got a great track record. You only have to look at this team to see that now. So whether it's that, but I also think, you know, it's when the footy club is aligned. You talk to Mick Malthouse and Dennis Pagan and those blokes, they'll always say a footy club has got to be aligned from top to bottom. Now, Melbourne had a few little wobbly bits in the middle of the year, earlier in the year when Glenn Bartlett left. You know, when you think, gee, it could fall apart here, it didn't. So strong leadership at a footy club. And you're seeing that at Collingwood and Carlton at the moment. There's been issues within there. So how can you have a successful team to do that? So I think they're going to be great. Just a quick one on Melbourne before we wrap up on Melbourne and head to the Bulldogs. Simon Goodwin, what an achievement this has been. He didn't get his moment to have his conversation, which on the, you know, we missed a great moment in history in a sense for him to talk on the podium. But what a great record that he's built, been able to build at the Melbourne Footy Club.
Yeah, there were some, you know, articles about on Saturday that I thought were pretty mean-spirited, you know, talking about how he potentially, you know, shown his anxiety in a couple of Zooms across the club and, you know, some behaviour down at Sorrento, you know, very titillating stuff. Yeah, I think that if you're, you know, shown your anxieties, as, you know, we've seen so many coaches in the last few years, I mean, that's being open about it. That's not, you know, being seen to be shaky. And so, you know, it was fantastic that he was able to set the record straight in that regards. You know, he's been true to himself. He's gone back and spoken to, you know, mentors outside the game. You know, it'd be interesting. I'm sure over the summer we'll find out who those people were. But, yeah, a bloke who's been a winner all the way through his career, you know, finds a way to win that premiership. You know what won them the premiership, Macca? Seven straight losses at the end of 2019. You know, you remember West Coast, how they had that horrible year, got a priority pick. They get Jack Darling. He comes out and he's dominant in a grand final. You know, you have that one poor year and it allows you to just turbocharge your aspirations. So they go 5-17. They get Luke Jackson there at pick three. They're able to do a swap with another pick that gets him because I pick it, and then Trent Rivers as well. You know, I mean, there's something to be said for, you know, the absolute cream of a crop that they had in terms of players, and then they're able to add in two absolute centerpieces of that premiership. But you know, you wouldn't want to do it by design because you probably get sacked. But when you look back at it, you know, that just added two more significant pieces to the puzzle, and they probably wouldn't have won the flag without them.
I sound like Lloyd Christmas here. So you're telling me there's a chance with Collingwood, Ralphie? Don't give up. That's what I like, mate.
Well, you haven't got five top 10 picks right now, but
no, we're good at giving them away. So, hey, just a quick one before we go to a break. On the Western Bulldogs, you have to have a winner. You have to have a loser. At the 19, you know, when the Bulldogs are 19 points up in that third quarter, I discarded my Melbourne winning piece and I was writing a Melbourne losing piece. What went wrong and how can they fight back? And is there any sort of mental scarring, do you think, from what occurred in that last sort of quarter and a half?
I don't think so. You know, I think that what they're able to achieve in the, you know, the 4 weeks before that and the togetherness, I don't think Luke Beveridge will abandon that stuff. They'll do a review and they'll realise that they got smacked in close. Yeah, I mean, you could say that it was the ruck issues there and Luke Jackson, but it was also just the fact that, you know, they lost their shape around the ball. You know, in those 5 minutes there, Bontepelli wasn't in the contest. You know, Libba just got outworked by Christian Petracca. You know, I think just because it was a fundamental, you know, stoppage mechanism that failed them, I don't think that means you have to be scarred for the rest of your lives. Yeah, I think a lot of these guys are going to want to hang on. But Jamari Ugle-Hagan is going to be a magnificent player. I know he might take a couple more years. You know, young Sam Darcy, who's going to be their father-son pick, he's very lean, but he's 204 centimetres. He runs like the wind. You know, he's got the athleticism of Ben and Max King. You know, potentially by 2023, he could be playing very, very solid football. So they just go and lick their wounds. They've got elite players. Their defence, you know, held up, you know, resoundingly well for 2.5 quarters, and then it just collapsed. They get Josh Bruce back next year. You know, Dunkley probably never quite caught fire after his syndesmosis. You know, he goes again. You know, Waitman was quiet, you know, in that last final. I think there's lots of reasons to believe that those blokes can fire again in a grand final as early as next year.
Well, let's go to a break and we'll come back, Ralphie, and I want to know who your top three players in the comp are going forward. Let's take a break and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Ralphie, 39 disposals in a grand final. Christian Petrarca, he's told the Tab Lunch today, the spring lunch, that the virtual one, that he hid away his Norm Smith medal. He didn't want it to be an individual thing. He wanted it to be a team more than anything else. Is he the best player in the competition now? And where's Dustin Martin fit in this pecking order of the top three to top five players you've got going forward?
Yeah, I think all you can do is line them up against the wall, as Mark Robinson will do with his top 50, and you think, okay, in round one next year, who would you prefer to pick first? And for me, it's Christian Petrarca. I think he's an absolute hair's breadth ahead of Marcus Bontempelli. And then if I think about my third place, you know, candidate, it'd be Clayton Oliver. Right now, in terms of dominating games of football, in terms of impact with football. Now, for me, Dustin Martin is outside that top three. Now, some people might say that's ridiculous given what he's done in finals, you know, or across his career. I'm not saying he's not the greatest finals player in history. I'm just saying right now that Dustin's got to prove himself again. You know, obviously we know the kidney issue that saw him lose, you know, potentially as much as 15 or 20 kilograms. You know, that's going to be a significant thing for him to overcome. So he played 16 games where he averaged 93 ranking points. He had 22 touches. He kicked, what do I have it there? We had 11 Brownlow votes. I think he kicked 19-7 for the year. So he had a really nice year for a lot of players. He didn't by any stretch have a totally dominant year. It wasn't a dusty year. Now, you know, he bounces back and the midfield, you know, fires again and, you know, he's able to perform like he has before. We change these things. All of these discussion points, you know, change almost by the week, as we've seen with the 2007 and 18 national drafts. And so, yeah, I would clearly go for Petrarca and Bontempelli is the best one and two, and then Oliver. It's almost impossible to split Petrarca and Bontempelli. Great years. Petrarca's kicked 29 goals, had 730 touches for one less game than Bontempelli, who's kicked 31 goals, 690 possessions. They both stood up in a grand final. To the victor goes the spoils. But for me, just the cleanness, the explosiveness, and I think probably even with Petrarca, just a little bit more upside. I still believe that Petrarca's can dominate even more comprehensively. Whereas Bontempelli, I mean, if he just rolled out, you know, the Rolls-Royce stuff for the next 5 years, he'd be one of the greats of all time. But that's why I would put Petrarca on top of the heap.
Yeah, it's interesting because Sam Landsberger had a terrific story leading into the grand final about where Bontempelli sits with Ted Whitten. Like, we know Ted Whitten, his great record and the like, but, gee, he is pushing it. It is a hair's breadth between those two, isn't it? Interesting that there's no Ollie Wines in there for you, the Brownlow medalist. Had a fantastic year. Probably has got to back it up in a consistent level, I would imagine now. Where have you got him, Ralphie? Is he far behind those top three, do you think?
Well, I'm putting Dusty in there. I thought he had a fantastic individual year.
Yeah,
you know, he's a bullocking player. He's an inside player. He's a contested bull. Yeah, he kicks some goals. Not to say he's not a match breaker, but I would certainly have Dusty in there. I'd have Fife in there as well. I think Max Gawn had another extraordinary year. So, yeah, Ollie Wines is in the top six there, but I think the top three are pretty clear for me. I just thought Clayton Oliver's season was just superb. You know, the way he just, you know, brought other players into the game, he kicked goals, you know, he was clean with his disposal. You know, Ollie Wines thumps the ball forward and he's a nice, strong, long kick. I don't think anyone feels like he's an absolute weapon with his disposals. He's just so relentless and allows the skill-based players at Port Adelaide to do what they want to do. Do you have any doubts about Dusty? He's got three more years left in his contract. You know, I think we all believe he's going to bounce back strongly. It's just, you know, to what level.
And motivation levels. I mean, it's really hard to know. He's been to the top of the tree. He's got three premierships, three Norm Smith medals. It's that motivation factor. But speaking to a few Richmond people, they seem to think he's very motivated to get this team back again. So that's obviously going to be something. Just I wanted to ask you about the player with a bullet. We saw one particular player just absolutely tear it up on Brownlow Medal Night, a kid from Carlton. Is he the one with a bullet for you, Sam Walsh, or is there a couple of others you think can just come out of the pack next year and potentially elevate themselves into a maybe even a top five sort of bracket there as well?
It's a great point. I think you'd definitely have 20 bucks on with TAB, wouldn't you, with Walsh? You know, like, you know, maybe his odds would be a bit shorter, but to think they'll bring Chera in, to think they'll bring Hewitt in, to, you know, to turn them into a team that potentially, rather than winning whatever it is, 7 or 8 games into 12 or 13, you know, all that can do is just push push Walsh more in front of the umpires at a time when they're winning more games of football. I'm so intrigued about what Luke Jackson might potentially be able to do, you know, what kind of player he might be able to be. Yeah, I just think he's absolutely spectacular, but he's never going to get a lot of Brownlow votes. But yeah, even yeah, I think it, you know, for a Nathan Fyfe, you know, only, you know, concussions, a few injuries there, only 3 Brownlow votes himself. All we want, Macca, is to have a Brownlow count that is, you know, 80% as good as last year's, because it'll mean the stars have been firing, and it'll mean that we've had another fantastic season.
Yeah, it's so much to look forward to. Ralphie, we'll take a break and we'll be back. We've had home and away season. We've had the final season. Now we've got trade season and you're all over it. And we'll be back in a moment to talk about the trade. Welcome back to the Super Footy podcast. Ralphie, you are all over the trade period. You have been all over the trades all year. How excited are you at this time? You must be exhausted from all your grand final work, but you just hook straight into the trade period. Even though it hasn't officially started, it's been going on for months.
Oh, I think dread is the word, Macca. It's never a great period to cover. You talk to, well, you try and talk to a lot of people who are, you know, really busy doing their own things and, you know, don't necessarily want to talk to you. But look, it's just a quiet period right now. You know, clubs, you know, for those that don't know, obviously the AFL put 9 and 10% pay cuts across the competition last year, but basically they told those clubs they could push those savings back into 2022, and that's what's going to happen. No clubs have really got any money. You know, I did my Wreck-It Ralph column today and ranking the 11 players who are certain to leave clubs, and there really were only 11 players. It's just some sleepers there. You know, for those Carlton fans out there, they're worrying about why they've given George Sheward a 4-year deal. Macca, I just think he's exactly what Carlton needs as a defensive-minded midfielder. He can tag. He was second in the club's best and fairest in 2019 when he played his last season as a pure midfielder. He only went in from round 15 and had, look, 13 tackles in a final against GWS. I know that Adam Chera's, who will probably on Wednesday nominate Carlton as his official club, I know he's seen as the more fancy player. But when you're bringing in a bloke at about 450, which is not massively more than the average AFL salary, I think that George Hewitt can be, you know, just hugely significant for Michael Voss. And he might almost be his secret weapon next year, even though, you know, it'll probably be Chera with those money kicks leading into Harry Mackay next year.
Yeah, it's exciting for Blues supporters, obviously, with Michael Voss and the like. What gets the deal done for Chera, do you think? And is there any flukers chance? We believe that it'll be Carlton. Melbourne obviously pitched really hard. There were a few other clubs were having a half sniff. What gets the deal done, do you think, for Carlton, Ralphie?
Well, Fremantle today was suggesting that, you know, pick 6 will turn into pick 8 through father sons. And then in such a crapshoot of a draft where some of these players have only been seen 6 or 7 times, they just don't believe that what will end up being pick 8 is anywhere near enough. I think the point was made that if you threw Chera into the open market, you know, he's probably pick 3 or pick 4. Obviously, there's a couple of father sons and Jason Horn Francis. So, you know, even at worst case, you'd be taking him at pick 4 in a heartbeat. And all of a sudden, you know, Carlton are saying, we'll give you pick 8. So, you know, potentially it might be another, call it a future third rounder or some more points that they can, you know, potentially drag that pick back to 6. Or actually they've got 6 themselves, their own initial pick. But, you know, they can just find a way to take a second player as well. And I think that's fair enough. I don't think he gets to Melbourne. I think in his heart of heart, he probably would like to get to Melbourne, but it was made clear that he's definitely going to choose Carlton there. You know, so for Michael Voss, you know you've got an elite back line. You know you've got lots of work to do with that back line. You know you've got a great forward line and you hope Charlie Kerno can keep fit. And you bring in 2 more players and you hope that Patrick Cripps is fit. I mean, he wants for nothing. He's certainly not going to have a massive honeymoon period given the expectations there, but, you know, I like it a lot. Pedal Adams is the intriguing one for me. He's a 23-year-old ruck forward. You know, he's got the capacity to be a first ruckman. Now, you know, where would that be? I think Geelong's got to move heaven and earth to try and get him. Maybe they might have to make a tough call on a Higgins or a Dalhouse and pay them some of their salary and back-end something. I just don't think you can go around with Reece Stanley again as your first ruckman, who, you know, who needs the cattle prod so often to play great football and then has 2 or 3 terrible weeks. Or maybe it's Mark Blitzaps. You know, maybe you try and, you know, just play Mark Blitzaps as your first ruckman as well, because, you know, he has been a very, very good player. I know he still has high best and fairest finishes, but you know, he's not the player he was, given he now plays a bit of wing, a bit of halfback, a bit of defence, a bit of ruck. You know, he's almost a jack of all trades and master of none.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you on Geelong. They've got to do something with that ruck. We saw in the preliminary final, you know, the way Max Gawn and Luke Jackson were able to just absolutely torment the Cats. They've got to do something there. Just on that, we talked about the Blues and the excitement of the Blues. Pies fans are a little bit concerned. They're obviously Dacos is the man, but will they have enough pick? Will they have enough draft points in the sense? Because they're obviously a serious chance of getting Patrick Lipinski and Nathan Kruger, Freddie. All the Collingwood supporters are all getting excited there. But will they have enough? Surely that's not going to be an issue. Surely those two, they can sort out a deal and somehow with a trade here or there get enough points to get Dacos.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah, that won't be an issue. They can do deals on the night. You know, they can use up, you know, future third rounders to bring some points in. I think what they won't want to do is to go into deficit on the night, and then, you know, potentially their first round pick next year might be pushed back, because let's face it, you know, they clearly, you know, may still be a team, a work in progress next year. I think they'll want to get either Lipinski or Kruger through the draft, but Geelong gave up 42 for Kruger a couple of years back. Lipinski, you know, they offered a 3-year deal to Western Bulldogs. So players don't want to go on the preseason draft. You've got to wait, what is it now, the 28th of September? You've got to wait till, 25th of November. So you can't even start training with your club. There's a bit of uncertainty about that. And more to the point, your former club gets screwed over. So I don't see that being an avenue there, but clearly they'll want to give up late picks for both of those clubs, and both the Dogs and Geelong are going to be in a fighting mood. So it's not really immediately apparent how they get more points in, because I think Mason Cox, you know, I think he's the throwaway pick if you go somewhere else. And we haven't really found a home for Max Lynch, who's someone who people thought, oh, maybe, you know, maybe they'll get some value out of Max Lynch and some draft picks to hand over to one of the other two players.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And just on Jordan Clark, like he's a fascinating talking point in a sense. He obviously has spoken to Justin Longmuir and is sort of thinking about that. Matthew Scarlett leaving the club, does that change things for Jordan Clark? What do you think will happen, and what's obviously going through his mind at the moment?
Yeah, I'm not sure that Jordan Clark's a superstar. That's my only thought with Fremantle, you know, that they don't want to give up the world for him. Geelong has said we want to pick between, I think, the first and second rounder, which is 8 and 27 for Fremantle. Now, Freo was saying we'll give a mid-20s pick for him. Look, he played 18 games in his first year. He averaged something like 300 metres gained, had averaged 16 possessions. He did flashy things, like in a really, really good side. But what's, you know, he's got speed. He's a very nice kick. Yeah, I'm just not sure. So what will happen is that, you know, I think he's spoken to Steve Hocking and he's spoken to Chris Scott in the last week and still wants to go. He put that official trade request in and he will get to Fremantle as long as that deal is reasonable. We've spoken a lot about Jordan Clark, even though Jordan Clark hasn't played a lot of good football for the last 2 years, albeit with a few injuries as well.
Yeah, it's a fair point, isn't it? Just on your mob, Richmond, Damien Hardwick last week talking hard ball on Callum Coleman-Jones and his bid to get to North Melbourne. You would think that's just going to go through at some stage, Ralphie, won't it? You would imagine that's going to happen. And what sort of impact would that be on the Tigers, do you think, going forward?
Yeah, I think it really hurts them. You know, like obviously Jack Weir might have one more year. The form that Jack was in this year, he still had his spring and he was still fit. You know, you probably want him to play on for one more season. It might actually extend Jack Weir's career because, look, Tom Lynch, he was going like a bastard for a lot of this season, wasn't he? So I think you'd be pretty worried about only playing, you know, doesn't it sound ridiculous? Tom Lynch, you know, superstar, two premierships, former captain of Gold Coast, to be worried about only playing with him in your forward line. But so like either Jack retires and it clears up some salary cap room and they go and, you know, go and launch for Ben King, you know, who knows? It must be said as well today, you know, people close to him are saying he's not going anywhere this trade period. You know, they're quite angry about the fact that people would think that Ben might break his contract. But going back to my point on Richmond, yeah, all of a sudden, you know, the succession plan with either Marby or Chole or Callum Coleman-Jones just really emerging from the shadows of Jack Rewalt, well, it's just gone. So they'll be a reasonable team next year. I still have some question marks, you know, the Riley Collier-Dawkins of the world and the Derek Agbelesi-Smiths and, you know, Hugo Ralph-Smith and Will Martin. And there's a lot of these guys out there that, you know, we've thought might be superstars when they get a game. I thought they were solid, but, you know, a lot of those, you know, your best players are your really, really high draft picks. And Richmond just hasn't had many really high draft picks in a very long time.
Yeah, just one club I'm really fascinated to see what they're going to do, whether they invest heavily in the draft or whether they do throw a few players up, is Hawthorn. Sam Mitchell, first time in charge of leading into a trade and draft period. What do you think the Hawks will do in the end, Ralphie?
Oh, I want to ask you, because you could say you wrote the book on Sam Mitchell. You literally wrote the book on Sam Mitchell. Now, he's a more empathic and a more emotional character, but I think, was it fair to say he's a hard bastard, Macca?
He is. He's a very hard bastard. He's always good to me, Ralphie. I didn't see that hard side to him.
But no.
There's no doubt. He doesn't take any prisoners.
So my point is, if it was for him to make a ruthless call on if someone offered a Mitchell or an O'Meara or a Wingard or a Gunston or a Segler, they've got 5, 21, 24. They only have two players on the list who have been taken by Hawthorn within the first 25 picks. They just need more elite talent if they're going to build a premiership model. So right now there's no suitors for any of those players, but I just Segler's the no-brainer for me. Yeah, former Collingwood player, Macca, 30 years old. They want to play Reeves. Remember when, Reeves was playing so well up in Sydney and then he rolled his ankle and then Segler came in and played great footy and kept him out. That's exactly the kind of thing. If Segler's on your list there, you'll play him instead of Reeves when the development decision is to play Reeves. Yeah. So, that's just me spitballing there. But, I've thrown up maybe if Hawthorn would pay a couple hundred thousand dollars of Mitchell's salary and get a first rounder in. None of that stuff at the moment is coming forward. But, I just think they have to make a call on one of those blokes just to get more elite talent in the door. I know it doesn't guarantee you anything, but it gives you a better chance right now because they've looked at what Essendon's done with picks 8, 9 and 10 last year. I've looked at Port Adelaide with Dersmer and Butters and obviously Willem Drew was, the fourth aspect of that quartet as well at Port Adelaide. And they want to do that, but it's not the year in which you can trade out those, 27-year-old players for first-round picks because no one's got money.
Yeah, they're a fascinating watch. Don't forget that Sam Mitchell won a best and fairest, or won more than one best and fairest, but in a particular year, won a best and fairest. Then a few days later, sat down with Clarko and orchestrated a deal to West Coast. So it's a watch.
That was a best and fairest year.
Yep. In a best and fairest year. How amazing is that? Interesting when you're trying to write a book in the middle of that as well, which is absolutely Ralphie, just a quick one to finish because you've been fantastic. Melbourne Footy Club, can they keep this group together? There's a number of players coming out at the end of next year. We saw Richmond were able to keep a group together for a long period of time until you get to a point. Will Melbourne get to that point at some stage, do you think?
I think they can do it, but I think players are going to have to take, 30 or 40% less than what they're worth. So, on the open market next year, after only three seasons, Luke Jackson would be worth $700,000 to a club. He'd probably have to sign for 2 years at $400,000. Bailey Fritsch, who's 25 on the 6th of December, what a great birthday. That's also mine. He's out of contract next year. He's just kicked 59 goals. Someone finds $650,000 for him. He's not a superstar, but he's just that exact third forward you need. He might have to sign for $400,000 himself. There's just not going to be the cap room there when you think about all of their megastars, their key defenders that who have come in are both highly paid. Tomlinson and Ed Langdon are highly paid. Across the board, those players are all on good wickets. Not million-dollar players. Max Gorn's, is on significant money as well. And so if they want to do what Richmond and Hawthorn and Geelong and all those clubs have got to do, they're going to have to sign for massive unders. And, sooner or later, they might lose a couple of players because players just aren't prepared to do that.
It's going to be a fascinating time. Ralphie, thank you so much for joining us today on the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Have a good trade period. I'm sure you will. You've been outstanding all year. Thanks for joining us, listeners. Good on you, Ralphie.
Cheers, Macca.
Thanks for everyone for listening. And we'll be back next week with right in the middle of gearing up for what's going on trade week.